thought leader and influencer. This is Luba Mayegiso and the Africa Report.
Luba Mayegiso, good morning. How are you?
Keeping very well, but I must register my complaint that the last time I was told I was very cerebral, so I was hoping for a really good, lighthearted theme today, like the hideous outfits from that Durban horse race or something like that, and then Lindy threw commissions of inquiry at me.
Yeah, sorry, you know, the lighter slot was already taken by Nick Rabinowitz just after eight, so you missed that slot. You're gonna have to, you are gonna have to be a little bit more serious. So Luba, yeah, let's just talk about all of these commissions, because you know, we watch them half the time with our jaws open. We can't believe, although we can believe what has gone on, because we can see the result of it, and it's just perplexing. You know, this last week has been particularly outrageous with this clear view that Zuma is still being protected by some.
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, I must confess, I've always had mixed feelings about them, and a lot of them have just been maybe superficial, because I've always found that they're incredibly long. You know, I think for many South Africans, our reference is you know, the arms deal commissions, and those went on for a huge amount of time and didn't really produce anything. You know, they found nobody guilty, and we asked ourselves what was the point. So I must confess that even my own thinking was tainted by that, as in, why do we need to do this again? Is it taking us anywhere? And of course, there is that fine distinction that, you know, a court judgment is binding on all parties, and a commission of inquiry just makes recommendations to the person who set them up. So, I think the length of time is what throws us, you know, into a tangent, and the cost of it. I mean, if you take the State Capture Commission, I mean, that was supposed to have cost us, you know, over 200 million in the first 6 months. So the question we often ask is, are they justified? Is it worth spending our tax money on these commissions? Do we get anything? But I must confess and say, you know, we do have a lot of them. I think currently, you know, President Ramaphosa has set up at least four of them: State Capture, the SARS, PIC, and the NPA. But if truth be told, there have been some results, not necessarily what we want, because the question we have to ask ourselves is, would people have come forward and given the evidence? We all suspected that something was going wrong, but nobody could conclusively say this and this happened. So I think on the positive side, we got actual concrete information as to what happened, not always everything that we needed to know, but a lot of information came out. Sorry. And I think the critical thing is that if you take a lot of the commissions, take the PIC, take the SARS, there have been recommendations passed under the president, and there have been consequences. So if you take the NPA one, we have two senior, you know, members of the team who were suspended and then who were relieved of their duties. We have the PIC one that is supposed to, you know, have submitted its final report. So not all of them are long, but the State Capture one is long. But I think all of us tend to believe, oh, these things drag on for 2 years. But here's my question. What is the cost of the issues that we're investigating versus the cost of the commission? It's a huge amount of money. I mean, you know, they're probably going to cost us about a billion rand, all four of them, the ones that we have ongoing now. But on the other side of the equation, how much money was lost through State Capture and such like? So I think perhaps as bad as they are, and I think, our challenge is that we don't stay focused, because they are long. I mean, I was watching the State Capture Commission in its first couple of days, and then I would kind of pick certain people, like Greasy came on, we watched him, Robert McBride came along, we watched him. Yeah. But after that, we kind of just lost interest, and we kind of pick it up as news headlines, and I think that is our South African problem, that we lose focus. But the fact that we as a public have lost interest in it doesn't mean that the work is not continuing and that stuff is being unpacked. And I think, you know, when you ask various people around and they say, but why do we need to have them? I think we need to have strong democracy. We need to root out the corruption. We need to deal with these issues. And there aren't many other ways. I do suppose that if you were ingenious enough, you could find more efficient ways to deal with the issues. But in some ways, in a democracy, you've got to kind of have this public engagement and say, look, here are the issues. Let's deal with them transparently. I read one report this morning that says if you take, for instance, the PIC matter alone, the PIC manages almost half of the GDP. And the question is then, should there be a cost in dealing with an institution that is so big? I mean, look at how much we spent on SOEs, on at Eskom, how much we spent at on the rail guys. So if you look at how much money we've lost in the SOEs and 57 billion in bailouts, then the question is, if we're going to spend say 100 million on a commission on state capture or dealing with these issues, I think it's not an exorbitant amount of money. Yes, there's a heck of a lot that's been spent on legal fees that are perplexing, but we have to deal with these issues one way or the other. And this seems to be one way that we have that has shown results. Yes, the arms deal, it was, we kind of ran down a rabbit hole and got nothing for it. But I do believe with the state capture, largely we have got interesting information. I mean, let's be realistic, Howard. Minister Nene resigned as a result of the State Capture Commission because he had to go there and say, well, look, I wasn't quite honest about the information that I gave, and he resigned. And once information started getting out, even people like Gigaba and so forth all kind of stepped back. So there have been some casualties. There have been some consequences with state capture. But I think for many people, we kind of almost see state capture as having an architect being a Jacob Zuma, and as long as he's still walking around, for many people, then it hasn't really done its work. And I think that's perhaps the issue.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You know, a friend of mine who often says to me, he thinks we shouldn't be having these commissions of inquiry. And I always challenge him on it because it goes against everything that I believe in. But his view is that unless something tangible and concrete is going to be done following these commissions of inquiry, then all it does is just devastate us further. Rather, let's just say, okay, corruption is now over. We move forward and not keep looking at the past, because if we're not going to do anything about it, then why are we even bothering A, to spend the money, and B, to actually devastate ourselves to this point? What's your thoughts on that?
The thing is, we don't really know what's going on. I mean, let's take, for instance, Agrees' testimony. I mean, he detailed many things that I think we can agree that the average South African had no clue what was going on to that extent. We may have thought there were some irregular issues, but what was detailed there painted a whole lot of people in a very negative way. People that we may have thought are not necessarily clean, but we never knew what they were doing. So whether or not the prosecutions, that's a separate matter. But what we have as a public are revelations which can be tested about people getting alarm systems, about people getting monthly retainers, and about corruption in the procurement processes in the departments, especially correctional services. That information, unless you were some investigative journalist, was unknown to many of us in the public. Take, for instance, Robert McBride. When he started dealing with the fights he was having, within the justice and policing structure, a lot of that was unknown to many of us. And it's information that we needed to know, and know that, you know what, some of these systems we have are not working properly. They've been captured. So I do agree with you on the one hand that it is traumatizing to hear this information. But if you don't hear it, then we can't fix it. So I think for me, it would be far more dangerous for us to live, obliviously and pretend that, oh, well, we've got a new president, things will change. Because essentially it wasn't just corruption at the top, at the head of the executive, but it was organs of state that had been captured and that had to be ventilated for us to know where the problem lay, because it had cascaded down to the various organs of state. And for me, that information had to come out. Now, what we do about it is an entirely different matter, but I think there have been some casualties, as I was saying earlier, but I think it is better, Howard, for me to know where the rot has set in, where things have gone wrong, than to sit and say, let's just pray and hope, whether you're president, all will be fine.
Do you think this is good for Ramaphosa in the long run to be able to have such clear lines being drawn? In the last week we've seen such unbelievable support for Zuma, a guy that's no longer in power, but clearly very powerful.
Well, it's very powerful, but I think at the end of the day, Ramaphosa, there are two audiences that he's got to almost satisfy. There's a domestic audience, which some of them may not be ANC supporters, but are patriotic South Africans who want to see that our government's in good hands. There may be ANC supporters who wanting to see that the party is now has turned a new page and is on the right path. So I think those two groups outweigh the Zuma faction. And then, of course, whether you're in the Zuma faction or the Ramaphosa faction or in any other faction, all of us need a healthy, vibrant economy. And the world is watching to see, will this president do anything? So I think the commission in some ways says to the world, especially the investment community, that we are dealing with these issues and we are going to, you know, address them. So I think he needs to do it. And at the end of the day, he'll be viewed in a positive light for doing that. I mean, four commissions, as I've said, you know, literally within a year, that's quite a lot. And a lot of them have been dealing with major issues. Yes, admittedly, he's inherited one or two of them. But I think the fight in the ANC will always be there, will always take place. But if he persists charting this course and sailing down this course, I do believe that we will, as a nation, defeat that camp that will defend fraud, corruption, that will defend corrupt leaders. We have to stay the course, and I think, you know, with the support of us South Africans, he will prevail. It's not going to be easy, but I do believe he will prevail.
34519 or 061-895-1019. We'd love your thoughts on this. What do you think the power is behind the power that Zuma still holds over many within his group?
Well, I think it's a multitude of issues. I think for the man in the street, he still remains a very charismatic and likable leader. You know, my wife often jokes and says that Juju made the statement that when Zuma goes out walking in public, you have to keep the crowds away from him. People just naturally congregate towards him, whereas the current president will almost be hoping that people will come and greet. And I think he has that natural charm about him. I mean, you know, he came after the Mbeki administration. Mbeki was viewed as being cold and aloof, but very intellectual. So he has a lot of charisma around about him. But then I think from an executive and senior level, there would be people who, for whom things had worked out favorably well for them during his administration, and would obviously want to protect him. And the longer you have things like the State Capture Commission, there are those skeletons that will come out, and there are people who may not necessarily want that. But when you speak to people who have supported him steadfastly, they see it as almost as this is a person who kind of stood by them in their hour of need or whatever time, and out of loyalty they feel that they will stand by him no matter what. So for them it's a matter of principle of saying, he came through for me, and I will support him. It's not about, you know, the optics we're looking at of saying, what's his legacy? What did he do right or wrong? They're simply looking at it personally and saying, he came through for me, and therefore I owe him. I will stand with him. And there lies the challenge, because it's not based on objectivity, but my subjective view of what the person meant to me. And there lies the challenge, because you and I want to take a step back and say, let's look at the man's legacy. But somebody is sitting and saying, I'm not looking at legacy. I'm looking at what he meant to me as a person. And I think there are quite a few people who were in cabinet, in senior positions, who would owe their rise to power or strength or wealth to him. And they will support him no matter what.
Absolutely. Absolutely fascinating. Time is 8:49. Lubomir Kiso, thank you as always.